to medical equipment to personal effects. And so, you know, a collection is, of course, reflective of the people who put the collection together. So it was the Historical Society who did this work and determined what should be a part of this 2,500 object collection. And it is a cross-section, a sort of time capsule, really, into the history of mental health treatment in the province.
You mentioned the collection has been managed or in the possession of the City of Coquitlam since 2012. What's new now is there's a new way to access and experience this collection. What can you tell me about the new online database?
I'll speak a little bit actually first to the work that has been done since the collection came into the care of the city in 2012. We've undertaken as a staff a series of projects that are about exploring the collection, creating inventories of the collection, and also documenting the collection through photography and other means. The collection also included quite a lot of paper material, archival material, and that material is in the care of the City of Coquitlam's archives, which is a separate entity from our department. And so the city has been working to care for this collection using sort of collection management best practice. This new database that we just essentially made live at the end of 2024 is really interesting because it's a living database. It's publicly accessible. Up until this point, we had through our website a PDF that was a fairly diligent inventory of this collection, but a database offers our public a different way to explore this collection. So if, for example, one wanted to look up all items in the collection that were the color red, then you could go into the database and you could use red as one of those search parameters, something you couldn't do, obviously, in a PDF document, regardless of how thorough it was. The other component to the database is that we're really interested in gathering further information and further stories about the items within the collection. So if we would encourage people to do this, if people have more information about an item in the collection, we would love them to get in touch and to tell them about what they have to share and potentially be able to add that to the database. So it's a living entity that we can continue to add to and build on as we learn more about the collection.
Really interesting, and you know, something I didn't necessarily think about when thinking about the impact of having this online and available in that way is, as you said, it being living and people being able to add on to it or add to it. Is there a process for that?
At a very basic level, we encourage them to email us and contact us through the website and through the database, and we'll start a conversation with them and identify how best to collect that information and then also to add it, dependent, of course, on the privacy considerations of their stories.
Sure. Beyond the living archive element of it, or why is it important for residents of Coquitlam or anyone else who might be interested to have this access to the collection?
We're very happy that our residents have access to this collection in different ways through the database, or possibly even if they want to come in and see particular items, that is possible too. But of course, with a database, suddenly it opens up the collection to a global audience. We anticipate, judging from previous interest in the collection and also in the items themselves, we anticipate that there will be interest not just locally in the collection, but also much more broadly. And so far, we've seen people who have personal connections to the items in the collection get in touch, but we've also heard from researchers and academics who are interested in this particular portion of BC history for different reasons. And then finally, we have members of the general public who recognize that this collection holds lots of different types of artifacts that are cross-sections and time capsules for many different industries.
We've spoken in broad terms about the collection. Just now you mentioned specific artifacts that people might be interested in. What kinds of things can people see in the collection? And then maybe beyond that, are there some specific artifacts that you think are particularly interesting or speak to something specific?
So the artifacts range, as I said, from medical equipment to furnishings, personal effects, and also kind of institutional items, crockery and uniforms and that sort of thing. For me personally, I find the personal effects most moving because those are items that relate to people's lived histories. And I think that those are extremely compelling. Coming from an art historical background as I do, I find the paintings and the other kind of craft materials that were created by people who lived at the hospital at different times in its history to be really interesting. There's in particular a painting that is a very iconic view of one of the first buildings that was built on the site that we know is a painting by one of the patients who was part of an occupational therapy program. And this painting was probably done based on a photograph that actually exists in the Royal BC Archives. So that also speaks, of course, to the way in which this collection is just one collection that touches on this place. There are, as I say, items in the City Archives that also relate to Riverview, and there are items at the Royal BC Museum and Archives that also touch on it and different records there. So our collection is just one of many collections out there that touch on this particular area. But for me, circling back, I find the paintings and the crafts that were made by people who lived there to be super interesting and quite compelling.
Could you describe the specific painting you're speaking about?
So the painting that I'm referring to is a landscape of the primary, one of the first buildings at Riverview. And it shows the building in the wider landscape with rows of daffodils. And it's painted fairly naively. It's not a complicated painting, but it is a really interesting personal connection between the artist and this place where they lived. I mean, we know that there were certain points in the hospital's history where the residents were asked or expected to make things that could then be sold to support the running of the hospital. So we've seen examples not just of paintings, but of embroidery. We also know that there was a working farm on the property where butter was sold from it and cheese was sold from it. So it speaks to the larger ecosystem of the hospital and how it was managed over its almost century of operations.
And so obviously, as you've mentioned, one thing we can learn from these artifacts is, well, there's sort of a portrayal of the history of mental health care in the province. Is there anything else that you hope people might be able to take away from this collection, from viewing the collection?
One of the more unique and perhaps difficult parts of this collection, which arguably is sensitive in nature, is that the collection holds 11 different electrotherapy machines, and these machines date from different periods. They're not just, you know, the same example of the same machine from the same time period. So I think that from a researcher's perspective, that's a really interesting snapshot of different medical therapies that were being employed. But again, I think that for most people, it's less about the kind of academic side of things and more about the lived histories that are represented by these objects that people can learn from and take interest in.
There's another part of this that I saw mentioned was the artifact loan program.
So, like I said, we've put the database out there for people to be able to access the objects. We're looking for people to come back and tell us more, possibly about the objects in the collection. But we're also interested in sharing these objects. We have cared for this collection over the last 12 years, and we're very hopeful that institutions, museums, and other sort of institutions will be interested in putting together exhibitions that will borrow material from this collection. And so we're piloting some loan projects this year and are happy to consider any other requests that might come in for institutions to borrow these objects for their own exhibition purposes.
Do you have hopes for what this collection might be able to accomplish or for what might come from it?
At the minute, we are excited to offer people a deeper opportunity to explore the collection more through the database and are looking to gather stories related to the objects in the collection.
Well, thanks for taking the time to sit down and chat with me today.
Thanks, Jesse. It's been a pleasure to speak.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Watutimunolo, shy. Then got my phone, they charged up. Small, small man, teens on the pile up. Anime get blazed and I sign up. Somewhere where the stress no go find us. 4-2-3-1, then I pilot. Every day stuck in traffic. No AC, so I'm wet like a catfish. My guys on the web doing that catfish. 19 teens did the cash hit. But I'm here stuck in transit. Omo, I go turn to a bandit. Cause I won't flex like Hush Puppy. But my conscience got the best of me. Got no time for the jealousy. Make I enjoy being a necessity. Gotta wait for the kush. Say if I move, he go shoot. Make I drop like Nion D. And he wanna rest of the goose. I'm like, whew. On my last week, man, dude got shot. For the same checkpoint where I cross. Caught in a race and I can't chop dust. Watch your downs and watch your ups. Cause you never know when you might get caught. Yeah. Cause you never know when you bite that dust. Pawn road from dawn to dusk. Get that dose, a must.
I love you, just that.
It's something wrong with my life. When I tell my babies no more, I could get to Europe.
Hi, my name is Taco. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Oh, this thing is fast.
Inside the Burnaby offices of Embark Sustainability, the student-led climate and sustainability organization at Simon Fraser University, students are practicing the three R's: reduce, reuse, and recycle, by repurposing and upcycling something old into something new at the Rework, Reuse, Revolutionize Climate Workshop.
Making a bag, yeah, out of a shirt.
Something about an old shirt's pattern spoke to Lucaya, a student at SFU, and soon he'll be able to carry that inspiration slung around his shoulder.
This one, we got some giraffes some tigers, some mountains. Yeah, I like tigers. So it's looking pretty sick.
One shirt was music to Fernanda's ears.
I'm working on a tote bag. Right now, the straps for the tote bag.
Yeah.
So it's got a real old Rolling Stones t-shirt. Yeah. I just like, you know, bands, and I also saw that it was like a black tote bag, and I only have white ones, so I went for the black, and then Rolling Stones is kind of cool, so can't go wrong.
Rebecca Ballard is the climate equity coordinator for Embark Sustainability.
We're doing our Rework, Reuse, Revolutionize climate equity workshop. So we're here today making tote bags out of old t-shirts that people brought in, just to show people the power of sustainable fashion, using what you already have at home versus going out to buy something new. So yeah, everyone brought in some t-shirts to make, and now everyone's just kind of making them.
Ballard says that upcycling, in this case, taking old t-shirts and transforming them into tote bags, is one of many ways that individuals can live more sustainable lives and have an impact on global environmental issues.
One of the big ones is reducing like global textile waste. That is like such a prevalent issue when you look at like garbage patches, and when you look at dirty beaches full of garbage, a lot of it is textile waste. So we're working to implement solutions to that by reworking what we already have, and also reducing the human labor costs that is associated with the textile industry, like workers in Bangladesh and Vietnam and things like that, working in not so great conditions for not so great pay. So just working on sustainability from like an intersectional perspective.
According to Ballard, workshops like Rework, Reuse, Revolutionize are particularly useful for students, allowing them to build skills and relationships that will serve as lifelong tools in the fight for a sustainable future.
I think it's important for students to get involved in this way because it shows them self-sufficiency kind of skills and allows them to bring these skills into their worlds and into their circles and really permeate that knowledge to other people.
I'm learning how to machine sew. I don't really know how to machine sew a whole lot, but yeah, learning about upcycling fashion and how to make things out of other things. I thought it was a bit harder to machine sew. I'd like try to learn before and I had a tough time, but there people have been really helpful, and it's very accessible.
I already have interest in, you know, repurposing clothes, and I just wanted to, like, you know, someone tell me that I'm doing it right or like not, or get some better tips on it so that I can do it on my own time. I think just like how easy it is to use a machine and just like knowing what everything is and like how to set it up. Like once you kind of get it down, it's pretty simple, and I think anybody could do it.
So far, it's been really positive. Everyone's super engaged with the event, and everyone's learning to help each other because we only have one facilitator who really knows how to sew. So as we're learning, we're also teaching each other and learning how to thread machines and just working on other kinds of skills. So people have been very engaged and just receptive to the event.
Yeah, it's something I really like to look into a lot on my own time, I think. And it would be cool to like teach other people how to do that. So I would like to learn more about it myself.
Beyond learning how to sew with a machine and create a one-of-a-kind bespoke tote bag, participants in the Rework, Reuse, Revolutionize Climate Workshop are building an important network of like-minded climate community members.
The importance of community with sustainability is that's how we sustain ourselves, is through community. We can't do it without community. Everyone you see succeeding has community behind them, and here we're building community in our fashion textile working shop and just really learning from each other.
From Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia, I'm Jesse Wenslaw from CJSF 90.1 FM reporting. This report is made possible by funding from the Community Radio of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is available online at frequencynews.ca.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, Le Chablis.
Reporting from Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, or SFPIRG, is a student-led organization at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia, that focuses on issues regarding social and environmental justice. SFPIRG also provides political education services, and on January 14th, 2025, the organization held a radical book fair titled Rebel Reads that included various titles all pertaining to SFPIRG's focuses of social and environmental justice. CJSF took a trip down to the fair to learn more about what it had to offer, and we were able to gain some insight from Noel, SFPIRG's Director of Engagement.
The idea for this book fair actually came from one of our board members. We wanted to kind of like bring some of the books that we had like kind of removed from circulation in our library just because they were like maybe a bit older or folks like weren't sort of checking them out or they weren't getting the love that they deserved. So we wanted to bring them out here today. And, we've got a ton of titles, honestly. We're really trying to get them off our hands. So we're selling them for, like, $3, but also it's pay as you can. So folks can kind of just, like, get at really good ideas. Because I think it's also just really important, I think, given the kind of, like, moment that we're in to be, like, reading material and literature that is, like, conscious, political, and sort of directing people toward radical and revolutionary change.
Afterwards, we further discussed how SFPIRG curated this specific collection of books to include for the Radical Book Fair.
These books came from a while back. Like, we sort of removed them from circulation before I actually started working at the PIRG. So, like, 2 years ago. And so it's kind of a hodgepodge. There's, like, a lot of different stuff here, but all sort of, like, things that had arrived in our library because folks had kind of named an interest in them originally. So things that student boards and folks on the board in the past had sort of identified as important to read or as relevant to the kind of political interests of people at the time.
Lastly, we asked what the SFU community response has been to this Radical Book Fair and if SFPIRG has any other plans in the future for similar events.
We've had like lots of folks just like coming by and kikiing over the reads. And yeah, we would definitely love to do more stuff like this, especially because, again, like, it's just nice to have, like, radical literature be shared with folks so that people can be, like, elevating their consciousness on campus, bringing it to their classrooms, and, you know, elevating kind of the sort of politics of their discussion.
Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thank you so much for tuning in to this segment, which would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. You can also listen to this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Are you passionate about skiing and looking for a way to give back this season? Join Canadian Adaptive Snow Sports and help us make a real impact by volunteering your time. From teaching adaptive skiing or snowboarding techniques to supporting our events, there's a role for everyone. Visit our website at www.cads.ski to learn more, volunteer, or make a donation.
Hey, hey, this is Thurston. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby. Yeah, keep listening to it.